The Waddle and Sylvie podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook app.
Use promo code WMVP.
Tune in every Friday for the official Waddle and Sylvie Same Game Parlay on the DraftKings Sportsbook app.
21 years or older, Illinois only. Eligibility and terms at DraftKings.com/football terms.
This is ESPN 1000. WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Now, back to more Waddle and Sylvie, live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
We're seeing Justin Fields just grow as a quarterback throwing the football.
Looking to throw again. Come back route, it is picked off potentially by Jair Alexander, and sure enough it is. Fields launches it, he's intercepted. That'll put it away, it's Keyshawn Nixon to put it on ice.
It was the couple of lowlights, the two interceptions that bring down a wonderful day for Justin Fields. It was a slump in the couch moment for me. I wanted it so bad.
Did it hurt more because of the Packers? Rodgers? Yeah, I played Rodgers from most people's perspective.
And like, again, I mean, I knew what the narrative would be with some, that some would spin it again. Oh, that he can't finish, that he's not good enough, that he screws up in the fourth quarter. He'll buckle. And things like that. And again, he is still a developing quarterback. It is.
With not a lot around him.
Yeah, of course.
Next year, I know this time.
That and you know that. Yeah.
This time next year, there should be significantly more talent around him.
Sure. And there's a lot of talent around Josh Allen. And Josh Allen has thrown his share of fourth quarter red zone interceptions.
Red zone picks.
Yeah. Like, they've all struggled with him, and it ebbs and flows with the quarterback position. And a week ago, we were raving about Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence this week against Detroit didn't look so great.
17 picks in his rookie year, too, that I think he's learned from.
It goes up and down.
Yeah.
And so I did want, of course, I want him to finish. But when you back off, and it reminds me a lot of, and I'm not there yet, though, and I'll let you break this down in a minute, and I'll play you some of the field stuff from the interception. But when the Cardinals and Cubs were playing in 2015, and I always get mixed up with Rodon and Hector Rondon. Gave up the home run late against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals beat the Cubs mid-season 2015. And been just like the Packers, it happened against the Cubs' rival, and all the Cardinal fans were coming after me. Not ready for the big time yet, Sylvie, with your 2015 Cubs. And that's when I gave my rant to Cardinal fans that we were coming for them. Now, that was a team that I knew was pretty damn close. This Bears team ain't close, but I do know that Fields is getting closer, and that's why I tweeted what I tweeted yesterday after the game. I do totally believe that there are great days ahead for Fields, and that Fields will use yesterday's day as a building block day in years to come, and as a memory that he will spin and say, I remember that day. I remember the day against the Packers where I threw a couple of late interceptions, and I remember that feeling, and I'm, you know, never going to forget that, and I will always remember how it felt walking off the field and spin it for good. So I don't totally feel like I felt in 2015, because I don't believe that the Bears are where the 2015 Cubs are.
Not
far
yet.
From it.
Yeah.
But I do believe that I have a feeling with Justin Fields, like I did with the 2015 Cubs, that I am totally bought in with him, that he will take the Bears places, that this is the right guy to eventually take this Bears team to places we've never seen from a Bears quarterback in our lives.
If you told me at the start of the year, what's today, December 5th? Then on December 5th, I'd feel this optimistic and this excited about him. I would have taken it every day. every day of the week. If you told me at the beginning of the season that we went, that we will get to December 5th, it will ebb and it will flow. There's some roller coaster nausea that you'll get, especially early on. But when we get to this, the tail end of the season, and we get to December 5th, this is who he'll be. I would have taken it right then. I would have signed off.
You know, like
unfinished product.
Eight games ago, we were wondering, could he put a full game together?
Yeah.
8 games ago, we were wondering, can he put together a full game? You know, and now look at where they are.
That's why patience is a virtue.
Yeah. So here's Fields. What happened on that first interception? We heard both of them. What was the one with Equanimeous St. Brown?
Just a dig route. I think 23 made a great play on that play. You know, EQ was underneath him. But, I mean, at that point, once you throw that ball, you anticipate the throw. And then, boom, he jumped it. And then, really, at that point, you just like to see the receiver, you know, come back to the ball. You know, we always just try to tell the receivers that, you know, those DBs are going to, you know, they want that pick each and every time. So they're going to attack that ball. So, yeah, that's just a, you know, timing throw, anticipated throw. And I think 23 just made a good play on that.
So you'd like to see the receiver come back to the ball. And that's something that is interesting for a quarterback to say. And Schlereth on the broadcast said that one's on the receiver as well.
I think I'm the only person in America that has a different take on all of it. First of all, to address that, I heard Courtney say this today. Like the route was run as a curl and it was thrown as a curl. It's interesting that they said that it was supposed to be a dig because you come out of your break and you're not coming back to the ball. You'd be going horizontal. It's like a dig is up X number of yards and across the field. But it wasn't run that way. It wasn't thrown that way. It looked more like a called curl route, but that's neither here nor there. This is an interesting play to me. The easy thing for I think many is to just to look at the play and say, well, Equanimeous St. Brown didn't come back to the ball, which he did. I'll get to that in a second. To me, that play was more about a cornerback in Jair Alexander, who is a fantastic player. He's a perennial Pro Bowler. He jumps every route known to man, and we saw that earlier in the game. He settled his feet on a deep ball to Equanimeous St. Brown. Justin drops a dime on him. It's a 50-yard gain because he didn't think that St. Brown was going to go deeper. Later in the game in the second half, they run a hitch to the outside, to the left with N'Keal Harry, and for whatever reason, I think there was some early pressure, and Alexander jumps the route. And Justin buys some time, and then Harry turns it upfield and beats him downfield. So he's a guy that historically will jump routes. So you know that. That's in your mind. He's going to jump routes. When that play develops and starts, Alexander, if you watch the tape, never gets out of his back pedal. He drops back. He never turns his back to the quarterback. He's shuffling backwards. He's in man coverage, but he's not threatened by St. Brown. And I'll get to that in a second as well. So the point is it's... it's a tough coverage on this route for the quarterback. He never takes his eyes off of Justin. He never gets out of his back pedal. So his back is never turned to the quarterback. So everything's in front of him. So he has an advantage on breaking on that football. If you look at the film as well, Justin, a young quarterback, at times will lock in on somebody. And I think Tom Thayer was saying it as the play happened. It was the same thing I think a lot of us were saying. He was locked in on St. Brown on the throw. So is with that as the backdrop, you've got a cornerback who loves to gamble, and you've got a wide receiver at this point who's beaten St. Brown Alexander earlier in the game on a deep route. Where I'll be critical of Equanimeous St. Brown is he struggles to make all of his routes look the same. So if you watch the film and he runs the 9 route early in the game, he just takes off. And he catches Alexander settling his feet. He's gone. And Fields throws a great pass. On this route, if you watch the film, he comes out and he's not busting ass to the top of the stem. So when you have a cornerback that's as talented and as experienced as Alexander, he can get that tell from you. If you come off the line of scrimmage and you're not busting ass, something's going on here. And the fact that he's dropping back and staring at the quarterback and never has to turn and run means his eyes are always in the backfield. So the tell for Equanimeous St. Brown is that you're coming off not at the same pace you do with a 9. So if I'm an experienced corner, I'm like, he ain't taking this deep. So that's where I would be critical of St. Brown. St. Brown's 6'5". You run a 16 to 18 yard hook route. He's going to struggle to get out of his break quicker than Darnell Mooney because he's a long strider. Shorter, faster, quicker, you're going to get in and out of your breaks quicker. So already again, so I'm looking out there. I know I've got a curl route. I got a corner sitting on this thing. In a perfect world, Justin comes out of the huddle, looks to the side. He knows, hey, I got a curl route with St. Brown, long strider, choppy stepper. I got a cornerback here that likes to jump routes. Maybe this isn't the matchup I like. Maybe I'll look to the right on this time. This is where I'm saying it's a learning moment for him. I'm not mad at Justin Fields for that. For me, it's a bad call. You're asking in that moment a guy that doesn't run that type of route well to run it against a cornerback who likes to jump routes. So in my world, it's just one of those things where a lot of things happen in a play. Could we say St. Brown made a mistake? In my world, his mistake is he varies his route. He doesn't come out running the route at the same pace. That's what I would say. Because he does get to the top of his stem. He stops at the 29 or 25, and he does come back. But because he's a big guy, doesn't come out of his breaks well, he doesn't get out of his break the way that Mooney would. And at that point, Alexander runs a better route than him. He's a gambler. He drops back, never turns his back, and he runs a better route and beats him to the spot. So at the end of the day, I look at this play, and if I'm a coach, my teaching point is this. EQ, you got to run all your routes at the same speed. Whether you're running a 16-yard in, you're running an 18-yard comeback, you're running a 9 route, you can't give that tell to a cornerback. If I'm talking to Justin, my statement to him is know your matchup, which is hard. You're a second-year quarterback. You're learning this stuff. You're going to play this guy twice a year with the Green Bay Packers. He jumps everything. You beat him twice already in the day because he jumps routes. Just know that that's not a great matchup based on the receiver. If that's Darnell Mooney, maybe it's a different matchup. Maybe Alexander gives him more leeway. Maybe he turns and runs with him. Maybe Mooney gets in and out of his break quicker. I just look at that play, and it's a longer there's a different story to it to me than everybody else. The easy thing to say is, well, St. Brown didn't come back. Well, you see the film. St. Brown does come back. He comes out of the break slower than a smaller receiver would because he's 6'5". And the other guy, the cornerback, played it perfectly. He's a Pro Bowler. He made a play. And the only thing I would say to Justin, when you come out of the huddle and you look across, and it's a lot to ask a young quarterback, choose the matchup that you think fits best. So I'm not pissed that Justin threw the ball. I want him to make these plays and find these things. They may turn into mistakes,
Who's it on?
Place blame on somebody. That's what we're looking to do. I would say it's a bad route for that situation. I would say that Equanimeous St. Brown needs to run his routes all at the same pace. And I would say to Justin, don't stare down your receivers and know the corner based on the route you're asking your receiver to run.
Everyone's got a hand in it.
Yeah, that's what I would say to it. Look, I haven't been afraid to criticize receivers. I told you that Mooney basically cost them the Washington game. There have been Equanimeous St. Brown drops the pass on fourth down against the Dolphins. This isn't me just siding with a wide receiver. I just think it's a more complex conversation. When you see Jair Alexander never get out of his back pedal, never turns, his eyes are on the backfield the whole time, he's going to break on the ball quicker than the receiver will. It's one of those situations where a talented cornerback took a risk and made the Bears pay for it.
Here's Alexander's quote. He says on the interception, he says, I knew it was coming. One thing about the receiver that I got the pickup on, you're going to know when he's about to breaking down his route. So I already knew it. I envisioned it. I was telepathic because I seen it before it happened.
He wasn't telepathic on the go route where he got smoked by St. Brown. But this is where I'm saying, like, that's the tell.
Well, that's what he's saying, that, like you said, that maybe he doesn't run all of his routes the same way.
And that's the point is that you know that he's going to sit on routes. So if you're the offensive coordinator, you know a good route against Jair Alexander with a long striding 6'5 wide receiver is a go route. Maybe not that 16 to 18 yard hook. And if you don't get the look you like at the start, that's when maybe you choose somewhere else.
Luke Getsy coached St. Brown in yes. Green Bay. He's coached him here. He's coached Jair Alexander in Green Bay, or he knows what he's about by coaching against him in practice. If anyone knows all this stuff that you're mentioning, it should be Luke Getsy then. So why is Luke Getsy calling this?
I don't know. It's not a great call for me. But again, like I said, the other thing is if you have this situation, a veteran quarterback would look at that matchup and say, that's not my top matchup, and may look elsewhere. That's what I'm saying to you, that there are a lot of components to this play that I think serve as a fantastic learning experience for these guys. And next year, guess what? You're probably not going to have a number five wide receiver out there in crunch time running that route.
You hope not, but injuries happen every single year. And if Equanimee St. Brown is your number five wide receiver, there's a chance that at some point he may be elevated to your number three throughout the season if guys continue to get injured.
And then that's where I would say that's where scouting and game planning and all that comes into play. Know that corner jumps routes. Know he jumps hooks. Know he jumps in routes. You can beat him deep. If you see that look and you've got a nine route called, stick with it. If you see that look and you've got a hook or an in, be careful with it.
I like what you did, though, about you didn't go with the crowd. You broke it down the way you saw it. That was good stuff there. Someone, one of my friends already texted and said, class is in session with Professor Waddle.
Well, and look, as I've told you on all of this stuff, I'm not preaching to you that I'm right. This is how I see it as a former receiver. And this is what I would say to you as well. When I would play against corners that sit on routes, I'd come back to the huddle, I'd go to the sideline, go to the coordinator, I'd get up to Greg Landry, I'd say, look, they're sitting on everything. Everyone's going to sit on stuff with me because I was never going to really get behind them. So that's where you stutter and go. That's where game planning and play calling is important. That kid is a fantastic player. You can beat him on stutters and goes because he jumps everything. So just, this is why I say, just be careful. If we got a hook route called, okay, watch how he lines up and how he plays the play. As you saw the play, he never gets out of his back pedal. There are times if Equanimee St. Brown comes out, he's running the nine route hard. That's what the best receivers do. You can't tell until they get to the top of the stem what route you're running. St. Brown didn't do that. That's where I'm being critical of him. He comes out in a more leisurely pace and starts chopping his feet early, which is what a 6'5" guy will do because he has to, because he's a long strider. So if you see the cornerback in this route turn and run with the receiver, now you can be more confident that you can throw it. If he constantly backs up and never takes his eyes off the quarterback, be leery about making that throw.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Good stuff. Mark in Michigan City, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how you doing, Sylvie? How you doing, Tom? Great discussion you're having today about the development of Justin Fields and the Bears in general. My question is, it seems like the game plan they gave Justin Fields when they got down inside the 30 on their first drive, they didn't try to attack the end zone with a pass play. And later on in the second half, when they got first and goal, they went with a wildcat and three other runs instead of running a fade pattern to one of the receivers on a play action. You know, I don't understand that.
I don't either. I think Sylvie and I have been on the same page on this all season long. I want them to err on the side of being overly aggressive versus being on the side of being overly conservative.
Yeah. Yeah, like I've had a problem with that word conservative. Like, what is he being conservative about? Like, what is, like, conservative for a win? Conservative to not make a mistake?
I don't,
Like, you're trying to develop a quarterback. You are 3-9, so you're not playing to, like, you don't have to worry about if you lose the game that there's this big penalty. Like, there's nothing to be conservative for.
I'm not playing for field goals.
You know what? Right. Yes. That's what I mean. Like, yeah. That's why I even throw that word out the window. Whenever there's, like, people say, well, Getsy's playing conservatively. What is there even to play conservative for? There's only upside here. You have zero to lose. You have got to develop the quarterback. You've got to utilize his skill. You've got to let him try these things. And if things go poorly and you lose,
so what? You get experience.
Yes.
From it. This is where I said earlier in the season, I didn't understand why they chose to do what they do at the end of the first half, not going for it on fourth down. I don't know what better word to use to describe it other than being too conservative, but what I want them to do is put this young quarterback in position to learn from everything, to put him in position to be the reason why you make plays. Give him that experience. Give him the opportunity to go out there and learn from everything that is going on, as opposed to turning and handing the ball off on third and six in an environment where, why not? Wait, listen, Cole Kmet could use some of these reps. All of these guys could. Chase Claypool could use some of these reps.
The more,
reps
the merrier. In the passing game. They all can. Nick in Minnesota, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. Love your show. Fun listening to it up here in Minnesota amongst all these Vikings fans.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I agree. I think most people would agree on Fields. Like, we don't know 100%, but he's definitely trending. Like, he could be our guy. I think what we have to look at in the offseason is the O-line and D-line. You look at teams that win in the playoffs, it's O-line and D-line. That's why the Rams beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. That's why the Bengals, you know, beat the Chiefs last year to get to the Super Bowl. It's the lines up front.
I don't dispute. I mean, I think that, you know, listen, they didn't put a hand on Aaron Rodgers. They had a chase yesterday. They had I think they've had, what was it, the stat? They've had one sack from their defensive line in the last 5 or 6 weeks.
It's crazy. And I think not only that, I think part of the downfall of the Rams was once the beginning of the year, their offensive line was banged up. And I think part of the reason the downfall of the Bucs, their offensive line hasn't been right all year.
And neither one of their quarterbacks has the ability to escape and save himself times the way that ours does.
I think when you when Kansas City went to the Super Bowl, and when Mahomes wasn't protected and they lost that Super Bowl, they flipped the offensive line in one offseason. And when you get that offensive line right, when you build up that defensive line, you have to build, once you get the quarterback, you have to make sure that the trenches are built up. And I agree with him. You attack that offensive and defensive lines in this offseason.
No question.
312.
But if I could sell you that this kid would be this player on December 5th, going back to the start of the season, you sign up for this every single day of the week.
That's why I'm thrilled.
I am.
That's why I'm thrilled. And like that's why I continue to remember my expectations for this year.
And this is why I want him to continue to play. Somebody who I love and respect tremendously in this industry has a different perspective, and I would just say I respectfully, and I mean that, disagree with the concept that Justin should be put on the shelf and not be given more reps and more opportunity in the remaining games.
That's a good tease. Yes, someone that we both respect offered this morning that the Bears should shut down Justin Fields. That and some Waddle's World stories, including the hot stove has been lit and it is on fire.
Not here.
That is true as well. It is on fire in places where a team wins. Will it finally get warm in Chicago? We'll get to that next. Guys, right now it's the best time of year, isn't it? The holidays are back, and so is Toyota-thon. Love my RAV4. Went to the Holiday Lights Festival, Maze Light Festival, with the kids on Friday after the show. Driving all over town this weekend, my mom's birthday party. RAV4, great family car, absolutely outstanding. My wife went to the Bears game on Sunday. She used my RAV4, and we love it. Now is the time to get your RAV4 as well. 40 miles to the gallon, latest tech. We absolutely love it. Right now, going on now with Toyota-thon, you can check out one of 20 Toyota models with available all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, and that's incredibly helpful in the Chicago winters. Plus, every Toyota comes with Toyota Care. Check this out. It's a 2-year, 25,000-mile, no-cost maintenance plan that includes roadside assistance. It's time to ring in the season with a winter-ready and fuel-efficient new Toyota. Want you to check out Toyota.com. See all the great vehicles they have to offer. We checked out the Highlander. This is room for up to 8. It's an outstanding, luxurious family SUV. Maybe the Tundra. Got to check that out. What Len and I test drove in the shadows of Guaranteed Rate Field. Visit your local Chicago Toyota dealer. Toyota.com for the latest offers and more. Toyota, let's go places.
This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Amazing.
What's going on in the world of sports?
Look at all the sports things. So many aerobics in here. So many activities.
Let's find out together.
Step class. It's making my head spin how many activities we can do.
As we enter...
This is how we do it.
Waddle's World.
Da, 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 da. Yeah, let's do this. By the way, Step Brothers was on late last night, so I watched Yellowstone, followed by White Lotus, followed by Step Brothers.
How late were you up?
One.
Wow.
That's a late night. But I didn't catch Step Brothers until they're at the Catalina Wine Mixer.
That's late in the movie.
It was. So
that's a good happy ending, though.
No question. Yeah.
But 1 a.m., what? I mean, that's...
It was probably quarter one. Very tired. But I've sat on my ass all day Saturday and Sunday. I'm actually embarrassed to tell you what my schedule is. I get on my couch at about 10:30, watch, you know... Well, this time it was... When was the U.S. game? Was 9, so I was on the couch at 8:45 for that. That didn't go well. Then I segued right into college football, sat there all day.
I did think we were coming back, though, when it was 2-1.
A lot of opportunities early.
We were
early.
On the attack after it was 2-1. There was like a 3 or 4 minute period after they went 2-1 where we were still on the attack.
Well, yeah, that's what happened.
Isn't it pretty good, I think you
sent us a text that described everything because you're the consummate soccer fan here, that this team is significantly better than it used to be. They don't have anybody really to help them finish, and that's probably the next step in their ascension.
They have 7 or 8 really good players, so you're not fielding an 11 that will run with the best,
right.
But they're getting closer. Now, when I say 7 or 8, the problem was that two of those guys, Gio Reyna and Brendan Aaronson, were both on the bench to start the game, which was frustrating because, to your point, Waddle, that they don't have anybody who can finish. They don't have what's called a number 9, a true striker who you can rely on to finish those goals. They have, in the past, had guys like Clint Dempsey and Brian McBride, who are more natural number 9s, who actually finished at a higher clip than anybody they have on the current day roster. But when you don't have that guy and you're going up against teams like Netherlands, you should probably do your best to put your best players on the field, and that's why they're manager Greg Berhalter. I hope he's gone next cycle, but it was frustrating. You're right, Sylvie. They did get back into the game, but even the goal they scored was the flukiest of fluke goals, right? Whereas the Dutch, when they got their opportunities, they sat back knowing that the U.S. has better athletes than most nations, and so physically they let them wear themselves out and then just were absolutely clinical on the counterattack. And every opportunity the Dutch had, they finished.
How different is the game if they score right off the bat, if Pulisic scores?
It changes the entire mentality of the game. The U.S. have never come back from a 1-0 deficit in the knockout round of a World Cup. So they certainly were very unlikely to do it on Saturday. But yes, if you score that first goal time and time again, it changes the whole mentality because they would have been able to sit back and not have had to exert as much energy that they did trying to chase the equalizer.
That's good soccer breakdown there from Jeff Meller as the United States gets bounced from the World Cup. Croatia advances in penalty kicks. They take down Japan, and Brazil put it on South Korea 4-1.
Then don't forget about the Alex Brown mention.
Oh, yeah. Alex Brown, I love when he comes. First of all, I love him on television. He's a super guy as well and a fantastic player. He joins Cap and Jay Hood every Monday. And I think this has been something he's been constant about, that he feels that it would be prudent for the Bears to shut Justin down for the remainder of the year. And I'm on the other side of that discussion. I think that all of these reps are tremendously beneficial for him, and I can factor out the risk. There's just a natural risk association with the game that you're going to play anyway. When I put those two things and I put them in the scales, the experience for me is more valuable than, you know, the risk reward is definitely leans for me in playing and getting all of these snaps.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I think there could be a topic to this before the final game of the year, depending on what the circumstances are. But until we're there, I'm not sure. But at least for now, there's four important games left for him to get. Like, I was nervous. You know me. I'm nervous walking across the street. I was nervous going into this game because of the shoulder, and he eased my mind quickly. And I was surprised that they ran the ball. They were running the ball early with some designed runs, and he scored on one. I could not believe it. And it was like Mason was into the game, and, you know,
that's what you want. You want the kids to be drawn to the television for these games.
And Mason's all aboard the Justin Fields train now. Like, remember a year ago, he didn't know if he was a Bears fan, and I had to really talk him out of being a Packers fan because he's a bandwagon kid. He is all aboard what Fields does, and he was asking me questions, and I couldn't believe the run. And
there's better feeling than your son wanting to sit down and talk football, is
it? It was fantastic, and I gave him one of these. I said, Mason, Daddy would never steer you wrong with this. Daddy knows this stuff. Daddy told you, this is why Daddy got you the Justin Fields jersey.
Yeah.
He's going to be the real deal. You're right, Daddy.
Daddy buying you Bulls NBA championship tickets, maybe not so much last year.
No.
By the way, did you see Deion did take the Colorado job?
Yeah.
And then stood in front of the guys and told them all to hit the transfer portal?
Is that what he said?
You see this, Tyler? He said something to the effect of any of you, you know what, there's going to be change here. And if you all want out, light up the transfer portal now.
Or was he telling other people to hit the transfer portal other programs to come to him?
I think his basic message is we're open for business.
Yeah, oh, I know.
I was having a conversation about this over the weekend. How many years do you think Deion stays in Colorado?
If he does what he did Jackson State, it will be 2 years.
Yes,
how long did Mel Tucker stay at Colorado? Was he at Colorado before Michigan State? Is that where he was?
I don't know.
I think he was there for like a year or two, and then he went to Michigan State. And if Deion has the success, if I got this right, if he has a success there, he will be at one of these SEC schools quickly.
Did you see, too, I think the contract is $30 million for 5 years or $30 million for 6 years, whatever it is. The Colorado AD said, we don't have the money yet, but we're going to get it.
He's hoping he leaves in 2 years.
You were telling me that.
Unbelievable.
Mel Tucker was at Colorado for 1 year.
2019, yes.
1 year. So if he has success and he turns that around, I would assume one of these schools. I was surprised an SEC school did not come for him right away.
Yeah. I thought your play, a small play that you made on Alabama to win it all, courtesy of Doug Kazarian, giving you a thought. I thought it was money worth. You know, it was a $4 or $5 bet, wasn't it?
I have blown $3 in worse ways. Yeah. Much worse ways. It was a wild ride over the weekend of giving me hope that Alabama could make its way into the playoffs. And if you missed it, Doug on Friday told us it's 60. It was what? 60 to 1.
I thought you got it. Did you get 60? I thought it was 80, but 60 to 1.
I got in at 60 to 1. He was selling it at 50 to 1. I put $3 down at Alabama at 60 to 1 to win it all. So $3 to win 180. And they moved by the end of the day before the seedings came out. After the TCU loss, I think Alabama moved to like 15 to 1.
Yeah.
After they were at 60 to 1.
It ended up Georgia 1, Michigan 2. Congrats to Jim Harbaugh. I got to send him a text. TCU stays at 3. Ohio State gets in at number 4.
Yes, sir.
I can't wait for the 12. It's 12 teams, right, that they're going to go to in 2024?
Yep. So is this? So then the matchup is what?
1-4-2-3.
Yeah, Georgia
gets... So it's Georgia and Ohio State, Michigan versus TCU.
Okay.
So I enjoyed the Purdue-Michigan game. I don't know about you, but I didn't go out on Saturday night. So again, I sat on my ass and I watched college football until there was nothing else on. That's what I did.
Yeah.
Would you like some hot stove info?
Yes.
I know this isn't going to land well with you, but the Phillies have come to an 11-year, $300 million deal with shortstop Trey Turner.
Yeah, like a lot of years, but it was money, like much less money. Now he's young, he's older than some of the shortstops who have signed recently, but $300 million.
It's a lot of money.
Look, it is what, as someone pointed out in the Twitch chat, I think it was Rodney, who's a big baseball guy. It is what the market is these days. If you're going to want, now, Correa will be less, and then Swanson and Bogart should be less than that then. But again, it's something that a team like the Phillies have signed all these high-priced guys, just got off their World Series berth, and they're signing another high-priced guys.
I'm not sure Correa will be dramatically less. I think this is, especially because Boris is his agent, and based on his age and, you know, his wins above replacement year after year, I think they're probably going to be looking for a $300 million deal too.
I bet you he gets less than $300 million.
Do you know who else?
He may get less, but I think it'll be close enough. Like, it might be it'll be between $250 and $300. And at that point, don't you just want the best player?
Spend some of that ice skating money.
No,
up there
they've got the money. Like, this is, again, list all the players that the Phillies have spent money on in the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, Harper, Schwarber,
Castellanos.
They traded for JT Realmuto and then immediately re-signed him.
Right. And who's the pitcher?
Zach Wheeler.
Yep. Like, look at
Trey Turner.
And Trey Turner now? Well, what about the Padres? The, quote, smaller market Padres, who are in on a shortstop, too, by the way.
Didn't they last year, Miller, in the middle of the year, had already sold out all of their home games for the following year?
The Juan Soto trade, remember, spurred up their season ticket packages. Yeah. All of a sudden, there was a waiting list to be a Padres season ticket holder after they traded for Soto.
Have you seen this? The Padres, you know, with the suspension that they've got
with Tatis,
they're thinking about when he comes back. And with some of the injury issues, making him an outfielder. And they're thinking about going after a shortstop. They've been it. Yeah. Yeah. And they've got Soto and Tatis and Machado. Who else do they have over there?
Well, and then they've got a huge pitching, you know, Musgrove. Their pitching staff's loaded. Yu Darvish.
Yeah,
Snell.
And like the White Sox, like, aren't interested. Like, they were on the brink and they didn't want to go over the top on anybody.
Can I tell you again how much I like...
the Cubs have biblical losses.
But we love our coaching staff on the south side. Manager's great. The people that we've...
It's maddening. It really is.
The Mets also like to spend money. Three-time Cy Young Award winner Justin Verlander has agreed to a two-year, $86 million deal with the Mets. The deal includes a vesting third-year option. The option for 2025 is for $35 million.
So they got the Tigers staff back in place, don't they?
Verlander turns 40 in February.
Right, isn't this the old school 1-2 punch of the old Tigers rotation?
Yeah. No, yeah. Max Scherzer was with the Tigers when he really made his name and broke out. Yep.
By the way, DeGrom went to the Rangers?
Yes.
What was the number on that deal?
Well, the shocking part is he got 5 years, right? Isn't that... Many people were thinking he would get 3 years guaranteed.
Yeah, well, yes. 5 for $180, I believe, roughly, is the number.
You know who's not getting a lot of money, but he's going to get a change of address?
Who's that?
Baker Mayfield. Panthers have waived their quarterback, Baker Mayfield.
A lot of people believe that this is that he could be headed to San Francisco with the Jimmy G.
Some sort of under-the-table type of agreement of some sort. I don't know how you do that.
I think this is a player to be named later part of the McCaffrey deal.
That's good. By the way, this is from Albert Breer. He says, regarding Baker Mayfield, where a few relevant teams are in the waiver order, which would shift slightly with the Monday Night Football result, the Texans are number one. The Rams are number four. The Saints are seven. The 49ers don't even come in until 24th. The Seahawks are at 20. Because the number on his salary, what was it again, Tyler? It was like
so a team would only owe him $1.3 million.
So if you're the Seahawks, that 20, do you block him?
I'm sure.
Or do you just say, hey, 49ers, have at it with Baker Mayfield?
That's how I feel.
Would you let him go?
Go ahead. Baker Mayfield?
You want a little Baker Mayfield action?
I'd rather
take him.
If I was an opponent of the 49ers, potentially, I'd rather have Baker Mayfield under center than Purdy right now.
What do you think Shanny can do
with a Baker Mayfield to get him in the right.
Yeah, I would not want any. So as much as you think of Baker Mayfield, I don't think you want Shanahan to get any sort of talent. And I think if you're in the NFC, who could possibly battle the San Francisco 49ers, I think you want to block him from getting talent.
A friend of ours, a friend of the program, who was in the NFL a few years ago, has not been called by Shanny. But if Shanny called, he'd listen.
Oh, this is a good tease. Okay, good. So this is a friend of ours.
Yeah.
Who is a friend of Shanny.
Yeah.
Who is a quarterback.
We should call him. And let's call him and ask him if he's going to make the call himself.
Foxy?
Yes, Foxy. John Fox is going to
this guy said he would play. He would be available for Shanahan.
I think we should call him and ask him if he, A, how did he enjoy the game yesterday, and B, would he go back in uniform?
Is he available to be called?
I don't know. Maybe Tyler. Send him a text. And I have a... I have a Guns N' Roses. I have two Guns N' Roses stories for you
as well.
They're
back in the news?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right, that's...
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000 and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
You want a good Guns N' Roses story or maybe two? I think the answer to that question is yes. Axl Rose will stop tossing a mic after a fan was reportedly injured. I guess this is a 30-year tradition for Guns N' Roses that is coming to an end. The band's frontman.
It's a 30-year tradition that Axl Rose has drama at concerts.
Yeah, I didn't realize, though, that he throws his microphone into the crowd, and I guess this time it hurt someone. Or at least this time tossing the mic into the crowd and hit someone. Now he's going to, you know, they're going to say, hey, stop doing that, or we're not going to do that anymore, and we're going to protect ourselves from any suits. I didn't realize that at the end of every, is that common? I don't go to concerts anymore. Is that common when a band is done playing, they throw their microphones into the...
Like, is it just a mic toss, or does he, like, does he step and fire? Is it like a Jay Cutler throw?
Steps and fire. Oh,
that's the
there you go.
Touchdown celebration, too, is you score and then you just throw a dart right
yeah,
at the...
I saw
right
that the last
almost
night.
Got,
yeah.
Yeah, yesterday. There were a couple guys that almost got drilled
didn't,
yesterday.
Who was it? Was it McKinnon?
Yes, it was the Bengals. Jared McKinnon.
Jared McKinnon for this for the...
there was a guy who ducked.
The ref, ducked, too, yeah.
Axl Rose says, what did he say? We don't want anyone getting hurt or to somehow in any way hurt anyone at any of our shows. Having tossed the mic at the end of our show for over 30 years, we always felt it was a known part of the very end of our performance and all fans want it. We are aware of having to change our policy. Here's another story. Guns N' Roses is suing a combination florist and gun shop.
Oh, really?
Texas Guns N' Roses is the name of a store with a Houston mailing address. And what appears to be a unique business model. Their website offers an array of weapons for sale, as well as several floral arrangements that are also available for purchase.
Well, it is a good name if they do sell guns and roses.
They actually write it Texas Guns and Roses, whereas the band is Guns and apostrophe Roses.
Well, and they may not have a lawsuit then.
It's going to head. It's heading to court.
This should be an interesting battle.
Is it going to dumb court or smart court?
We should send this to dumb court.
Dumb court.
Dumb court. This is a great idea.
And it's a good TV show. Just called Dumb Court.
Dumb Court, where all your stupid lawsuits are adjudicated.
Yes.
All right, that's all.
All right, there. And are you going to? Can you tell?
I sent the text.
Well, no. Tell the story. Okay, next. Okay. Tell the story about Jay Cutler possibly returning to the NFL. There is an opportunity for Jay. Is there? Well, we think. You asked if there were, if there was an invite, would he return? And he said yes. 312-332-3776. Luke Getsy. I like him as an offensive coordinator in general. I hated a specific series of calls in yesterday's game, and we'll go through those calls coming up next.